You're listening to the Run Your Business Better podcast. Blockchain? Isn't it that Bitcoin cryptocurrency thing that you hear of in the news that young people are making and then subsequently losing a fortune in? And anyway, why should I be interested in it? Sound familiar? Well, in this episode of Run Your Business Better podcast, I'm talking to a young cryptocurrency trader and aficionado on all things blockchain, Mitchell Travis from Sydney. He's got a really interesting story about how he got interested in blockchain and then subsequently after that into cryptocurrency trading. And he also explains why we, the people maybe over 30, might want to understand blockchain and why it's important for us to think about it now with regards to running our business better. Welcome, Mitchell Travis. Tonight, we're talking with Mitchell Travis. Now, Mitchell is an expert in blockchain, something I really know nothing about. Welcome, Mitchell, and thanks for joining our podcast.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Maybe, Mitchell, you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into blockchain.
It was roughly around 2.5 years ago. I'm actually fairly young for the blockchain space. I was just finishing my undergraduate degree in political science. And I was a typical art student, had no real idea of where I wanted to go. And really what I decided to do was, once again, typical art student, go traveling. And when I was traveling, I was able to get away from the internet. And I really was able to think of ways in which the internet leverages things because I didn't have access. One of those things was the idea of news, or fake news was the big thing at the time. And trust was a big issue that was behind this. And while I was away, one of the ideas I had for changing trust is that all you have to do is turn each reporter or organization, media organization, into an individual. And then the individual is accountable for their own opinion. It's your choice. A little bit like, it's similar to Twitter in a way. And that sort of got me on the track of decentralization and that those sorts of ideas. I looked into it, researched.
So rather than a big media organization, you're breaking it down and deconstructing it into individual reporters.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, so then the individual reporter sort of creates their own voice. And up until now, that hasn't really been possible because you need institutions to establish trust. And that's actually how I discovered blockchain, was because it's somewhat distributing that trust to the blockchain, which I'm sure we'll get into later. And that was the first step, was I sort of started exploring that idea. The second step was maybe a year and a half ago. I heard about Ethereum, Bitcoin, all of these things. One of my friends, I've been a gamer most of my life, so I talked with people online regularly, and Bitcoin comes up. And I really didn't pay any attention at all to it up until a year and a half ago. So then when I was working on this side project of trying to change media, which was quite ambitious of me, and then also speaking to my friends about they're suddenly getting much more wealthy from purchasing these digital assets, the two sort of match made in heaven, and that's how I discovered blockchain and cryptocurrency and the like.
Right. And but you're now working in that field too.
Yeah, so that progression took me to sort of the reporting aspect of it and creating a digital voice took me to work originally at a think tank. And then after that, I spent a lot of time researching white papers because, as I mentioned, I did a political science degree, which a lot of that was economics. And what I really like about just to explain really quickly, a white paper is basically a cryptocurrency or a blockchain startup. They produce a white paper in a way to provide the public knowledge of what the company is planning on doing, somewhat like a roadmap. And you produce a white paper in order to get funding. In an initial coin offering, the terminology is constantly changing, but ICO is generally it. At the moment, token offering is also, token generation event is also another term for it. My backing in political science really got me interested because at university, I was studying all of the traditional economic theories and then non-traditional economic theories. And what these white papers are trying to do is use economics in a way which is separate to the economy and creating their own sort of economy. So that really sparked my interest. And a lot of last year, I spent time reading these ICO and white papers for two reasons. One, investment opportunities, and two, as just pure interest. And that sort of led me down the road of trying to reach out to these startups and these blockchain things. What's really great about the blockchain space is it's one of the more transparent spaces out there. So you can actually message people from the teams and ask them questions. And I found that really, really quite empowering. And that's how I first got into sort of looking for work in the blockchain space. Upon that, now I work at Brontech. And what we're trying to do is we are creating a decentralized data marketplace. In addition to this, we're providing a solution to digital identity. And why Brontech really sort of struck a chord with me or interest was this the identity aspect, because I found that similar to what got me into decentralized systems was identity and being able to prove your identity or make an identity accountable is really going to be an important thing we fix about with the internet. And I think blockchain is providing one solution to identity. So that really sparked a call with me. I, of course, then pursued the company, and now I work in the business development, product development, and community growth for Ronte.
Well, that's a great story about how, you know, you follow your passion and you get into something. Now, we've talked about your journey and what got you in there, but, you know, for us Generation X's, what is blockchain? In layman's terms, what is it?
Okay, so this question is quite interesting to me because one way I like to describe it is you actually don't need to know what blockchain is. It's similar to the way that you don't sell a car, a Porsche. You sell a car, you sell a Porsche. You don't sell an internal combustion engine. Or you don't need to know what happens in an internal combustion engine to realize and use a car. So blockchain technology is similar to that. It's the technology behind all of these different use cases. But to then explain blockchain, it's the combination of two technologies. One is a distributed ledger technology where imagine hundreds of thousands of computers all contributing to one network to then approve or disapprove transactions, actions, basically a transaction between A and B. If you have
it's a place for transactions to meet and get validated.
Exactly. And the important aspect of blockchain is it's distributed. So there's no single or centralized organization or point of failure. So these transactions are therefore trusted and verified by thousands of computers, therefore making it quite secure.
Yeah. So again, me, Generation X person, is that like it's sitting in a cloud? Is it? Where is this data? So is it sitting on someone's server at a company, or is it just you said it's in multiple or hundreds of different computers? Is it? Yeah.
So that's the last aspect of that. So every single computer that is contributing to the network, or some. So in Bitcoin's case, which is the first blockchain created, these computers are called miners, and each one of these miners, it's their job to perform the transactions. But what these miners have when they perform a transaction, they have a record of every single other transaction in the previous blocks that has happened. So it's forming trust. And if all of these transactions are then the same in the next computer who's trying to verify the transaction, and the next computer and the next computer, then it can go through.
If they weren't, then the transaction can't go through. So the more of these computers or miners that get put in the chain, mm-hmm. the more secure it becomes.
Yeah, in a way. So the idea is you make the information decentralized, or the data, or the transaction.
Because it's in these multiple computers.
Exactly right. And then you can't, say, have one person change one digit in one computer. They would have to change the digit in thousands upon thousands of computers for it to go through, which is a form of security. And DLT, right. Which is the distributed ledger technology aspect of blockchain. The other aspect is cryptography, which I describe as the wax seal of the internet or computing. So a wax seal in traditional times is you had a person sending a letter from A to B. They then put a wax seal on the letter in order to make sure that, of course, the person, when they received the letter, knew if the letter was tampered with or not. Now, imagine cryptography being like a more perfect version of that for the computing. So it's a combination of these two technologies. Put them together, you get the first blockchain being Bitcoin.
Okay. So I was going to ask you about cryptocurrencies, but I think that was going to be a little bit of a stretch at the moment. So what I might just sort of go and ask you, though, can we give the listener a sort of really simple sort of a transaction? And I've said before in an article that I wrote for First 5000 magazine about, I've got 8 fly fishing rods and I could use a platform like eBay or Trade Me or Gumtree or even Facebook to sell those fishing rods. Yeah. But if we had a blockchain technology to sell them, then all those middlemen would be taken out, because I wouldn't need them to validate the buyer and the seller and process the transaction, because I'd have this whole network of computers and things that would do the validation for me. So it'd be peer-to-peer, if you like, or person-to-person, straight transaction, no intermediary. Is that, in some terms, how it works?
Yeah, that's a fantastic example. So that it's creating peer-to-peer. Well, in the original white paper of the Bitcoin, it's peer-to-peer electrical transfer of money or value.
Yeah.
So that peer-to-peer aspect you were mentioning is really important.
So let's now talk about then Bitcoin, because a lot of people think, blockchain is Bitcoin, Bitcoin is blockchain.
Yeah.
But they're not quite, are they? So tell me about how Bitcoin started, which is really will give you an idea about how blockchain started.
Yeah, so Bitcoin originally started with the white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto in 2008. And basically what he did was he did the first blocks of a blockchain. He submitted some transactions between I actually don't know if it's a he or she or a they. That's an interesting aspect of Bitcoin, is that the creator of Bitcoin has stayed anonymous. And that anonymity is for me, quite a fascinating aspect of Bitcoin, and we can get into it. But to sort of explain, Bitcoin is when it first started, basically what it was trying to do is peer-to-peer transfer of cash. So all if I wanted to pay my friend who lived down the street, I could then just transfer them Bitcoin. I wouldn't have to go through a bank. I wouldn't have to go through a credit card or an FBOS or anything. All I would need is their wallet address and then my wallet address. I put a transaction on the blockchain. Once that gets approved by the miners, basically two things happen. The miner approves that I have one less Bitcoin, and then the miners approve that this person therefore has one more Bitcoin. When that goes through and is approved, then that's your first transaction on a blockchain.
Right.
That's the first form of a blockchain. And since then, there have been many evolutions, one being Ethereum, which integrates smart contracts and which is just a more complex form of exchange. But yeah, Bitcoin is the original and the most basic.
Yeah. So because Nakamoto's Bitcoin was written in open source, which meant that, you know, anyone could see the code. So people actually went and developed their own. So we've got Litecoin and Ripple and Ether and Dogecoin. One that I thought another one that I liked was Namecoin, which was a blockchain to register .bit domain names, which was a favorite of people in the dark web because no one could actually work out who had the domain or where the domain came from. So that one always got my interest. All right, so talking about before we talk about use, you mentioned before about, you know, it's really secure and it's transparent, things like that. What are sort of five, if you like, key sort of principles that every blockchain has, you know, some key things that you could say about a blockchain?
I think there are really three key things that a blockchain is trying to do. But what's important is that these three key things are a trade-off, which is where you get different blockchains. So the first aspect is decentralized. And I was speaking about this before, but basically that's where no one central authority or power or server or whatsoever is controlling the blockchain. It's on a distributed ledger, which is many, many computers all contributing to the greater network. Decentralized.
Yep.
Next aspect is secure. This is, it's secure because it's on many computers, but also because of the cryptography in the way that the wallet addresses are created. So that is one other aspect. And there are tokens which really go for this security aspect and create privacy coins. Some are like Monero. There are a whole bunch of privacy coins out there, and they are pushing that agenda, the secure aspect. And then the final aspect of a blockchain, or these are the three things on Zuko's triangle, but it's human meaningfulness. So whether or not people can actually use the currency for something. That's really quite important because you can't really have a currency out there and say that it's useful for all these things and then no one uses it. That doesn't really make sense. So the human meaningfulness is really essential to a blockchain as well. And you have to strike a balance based on your priorities between these three things, but they're the three big aspects that a blockchain really considers.
Right. And have you... So let's go back again to cryptocurrencies. I can sort of see the benefit for, you know, an easy, quick way of transmitting money in a secure way and taking out middlemen and fees and all of those sort of things. Where do I buy a Bitcoin?
Where do you buy one? At the moment, you have to go through an exchange, a digital exchange. There are plenty out there. Some of the big ones are... There's Coinbase, which is based out of the US. It's one of the bigger ones. CoinSpot is a really user-friendly one for Australia. And it's like setting up a, I would say it's a mix between setting up like a social media account and a like a trading account on the ASX or something like that. You need to do all of the KYC and all of these processes to confirm your identity. However, you don't have to be an accredited investor to buy a Bitcoin.
Okay.
It'd be a matter of going to these exchanges.
I'm interested in the social bit because last year I was actually having a conversation with your father, who's a friend of mine and who I've worked with over a number of years, and he was explaining to me about you trading in cryptocurrencies and how you have these – but and I come from a currency trading background, but the thing that that struck me that was quite different than say foreign currency trading was how social it was. That you go into groups, and it's better if you actually participate, and more like Twitter and Facebook and those sort of groups, and actually participate in them, rather than just buy a Bitcoin and sit on your backside and hope that it goes up. You actually need to participate in those sort of the social part of it.
Yeah, and I also really I find that aspect the most interesting too. On my background as well. And you're exactly right. And I think the fact that it's very much sentiment driven. Which is sort of what you're talking about, is because it's an emerging technology, but also because it's somewhat like the technology of the like the currency of the internet in a way. And the internet is a technology which has enabled better communication. And in a way, you have now more and more communication to sort of push forward a network, if that makes sense. I'll rephrase that.
No, that makes sense to me, because I was actually going to say that this is 20 odd years ago, back in the Asian crisis and things like that, and the currencies were moving, and it was quite a new, especially in Australia and New Zealand, was quite a new market. It was foreign currency trading. A lot of people said it's just like gambling. And the way I explained to people that my job, A, wasn't like gambling, because I got paid to be right more than 50% of the time. And if I didn't, I didn't have a job. Second part of it was that I actually had to understand how different currencies interacted with each other, and to understand that, I had to understand not only the economic, but the political, but the social and the cultural differences and similarities between two currencies. So if I was dealing with the Japanese yen against US dollars, quite different cultures, quite different way of looking at risk, quite different political systems, quite different economies at the time, a whole range of different factors. And, that's really what would move the currency. So that's why I was kind of interested when your father said to me about how there was the social bit. And I thought, well, it's just a new technology way of doing what we were doing 20 odd years ago in foreign currency, which was a new technology at that stage.
Yeah, that's a fantastic example. It's sort of like each cryptocurrency network. Well, what blockchain is trying to do is it's trying to create a network where value can be transferred. And the value of a coin is really based on how many people are willing to back it up, or how many people are willing to use the network. So it does rely on all of these people talking to each other and using it together, and that sort of idea, which is why it becomes so socialized and really sentiment driven. You get in the cryptocurrency community, you get sort of blocks of people who have fundamental differences in the way that they think a currency should interact. And then based on different world news, like you were saying, a certain currency will go up and down based on their fundamentals and things like that. So yeah, that's a good sort of evolution of currency.
Yeah. No, so that was just a fascination for me when like I said, we were having that conversation. It took me back to my heyday when as a trader, and he went, well, it's quite similar in lots of ways. Completely different technology, completely different way of trading it, but that social bit really got me quite engaged.
Quickly shamelessly plug an article I wrote. It's called The Power of Your Crypto Group Chat, and that touches on these exact things, is that it's the sentiment, what groups you're interacting with and how to interact with different people in different groups and understand their motives in the cryptocurrency space. It's an article I wrote on Medium. Yeah, go on. Right. Let's go.
On Medium, where do you find it, Mitchell?
So Medium is a website. It's a publishing platform.
And if you search got the URL or something for us?
So it would be medium.com. / Mitchell Travers.
Okay, we'll do that. So that's just for anyone listening wants to listen. Read Mitchell's article. I had sort of written down in my notes before we began this conversation three sort of benefits. I think we've touched on some of them of blockchain. One of them was security, and I think we've already talked about that. There's no single point of failure. It's highly encrypted. I saw a stat that it would take the world's most powerful computer something like 40 trillion trillion years to actually be able to break
to hack and
to disrupt it and get the information. Is that sort of accurate, or is that just
that's accurate.
Yeah. So it's hugely secure.
Based on the computing power. Yeah. So the computing power we have in typical computer, even the most powerful computer today, it would take a very long time to the end of the universe to hack a sort of blockchain. And the reason for that is the amount of possibilities and combinations, which gets into the cryptography aspect, which I described as the wax seal.
Right. And the other sort of thing was around benefits was around this whole speed and efficiency. So a bit like that fly fishing rod example, you can actually do something very quickly. But in a commercial example, is it a bit like, if I wanted to buy steel from Europe, at the moment I have to confirm an order and validate payments and check on my LCs and get shipping clearances and a whole pile of paperwork, right? What would blockchain do to something like that?
So what's important with blockchain with that example, and it's a really great example, is that it would leave a record for each of those points of the transaction. So it's more it wouldn't speed it up in a way that it will make the workers work faster, or it will make the oil smelt quicker, the steel smelt quicker, but more it would make the whole process more transparent, and as well make it more transparent as well as easier for each of the actors involved.
Yeah, so
to get from A to B, cuts out that whole typical cuts out the middleman, would make it quicker. That's the answer to that.
Yeah, so instead of having to wait for the customs clearance guy and then have to wait for the bank and have to wait for somebody else and things like that, it would
all do their own verification.
Yeah, it would do the.
It would be verified by the blockchain along the way. Yeah, great.
Yeah, so
that's gets into one of the. Really, I think blockchain has three big use cases, one being notary, which is that exact example. Each of these transactions or events can be noted on the blockchain and made more transparent for those involved. The second is identity, and I think this is a really big issue and problem that the world has to solve at the moment, and I think blockchain provides a great solution for the way that you can attribute different things to a blockchain cryptographic proof and identity. And the final one is digital asset management. And that's anything from what we were talking about with trading currencies to even trading utilities. So one of my favorite examples, and people in Australia should check these guys out, they're one of the leading Australian examples of blockchain, is Power Ledger. And what they're doing is they're putting sort of they're creating energy into a digital asset and then making it tradable.
Right. So does that mean that if I can set up an account with them and I'll only get charged for electricity when I use it, or is it actually trading electricity between retailer and generator?
So it's sort of the latter. It's what you can do is you set up an account with Power Ledger. You go onto their platform, and let's say during the day, because you're not at home, you're at work, you have solar panels on the roof. Mm-hmm. You can then trade the power that you're not using during the day to the cafe down the road who uses power all throughout the day. And then the cafe down the road can trade their power to you when you get home.
So instead of me with my solar panels on my roof having to just put them back into one of the big electricity generator retailers' coffers, I can actually give it to my neighbor or the shop down the road.
Yep. In a peer-to-peer fashion, exactly.
Right.
So what it's doing is it's creating a digital asset of that energy.
Yep.
And then giving that digital asset the ability to be traded.
Yep.
In a trustful manner.
Yeah. Before you said about digital assets, you said about identity. Is that something like with the medical industry? You could create a medical record for yourself, and therefore your doctor or the surgeon or the specialist or Medicare or your health insurance, it could all, be part of that blockchain.
Yeah, exactly right. And what's important with that is that you would own your own medical record. It wouldn't be in one single server or space, which could be hacked and used.
So that's something that people really worry about, is identity theft. So
exactly.
So is blockchain a way of potentially stopping?
And that's actually one of the things that Brontech is working on, is creating digital identities with blockchain technology. So you can have all of your identifying factors in one place, on your own sort of wallet, and then use the blockchain to then share different identity points with different people in a manner of which is it doesn't overshare your identity points, and also you're the one consenting to sharing your identity. It's
So if I created an identity for me, Stephen Barnes, I could share parts of it with the motor vehicle licensing team, I could share part of it with the bank, I could share part of it with the energy supplier, I could...
And every time you share that...
Yeah.
Exactly. And every time you share that sort of information, they would only get the information that they required, and they actually wouldn't get that information at all. They wouldn't have it tangibly. So one big thing at the moment is with Know Your Customer or KYC.
Yep. All the banks need that.
Yeah, exactly right. What happens is you send your passport, a picture of your passport in, you send a picture of your license in, all of these things. What is part of – it's legally the whoever receives that KYC is obliged to destroy these documents on each occasion. Because, of course, they're preserving your identity for you. That's really inefficient. Anytime you want to sign up to anything, you have to provide all of this information. They have to then go and verify it themselves. And then, of course, get back to you, be like, yeah, it's all good. We'll now destroy that identifying information that you provided. What blockchain allows is that instead you could put a cryptographic proof of your passport onto the blockchain. And then all you have to do is provide the hash or the
part of the block.
basically the proof, yeah. So the proof on the blockchain, because it was true at that single point in time, the blockchain recorded it. The fact that you have a passport saying that you is Stephen Barnes, therefore you can just share that with the sort of the service that you're looking for instead of sharing your entire passport.
Okay.
Now, so that's one quite revolutionary aspect.
But how can someone break into my blockchain account?
So it would be so you're sort of creating your own wallet, and that wallet would be secured through various means. And the best option for that is to actually store the wallet on your own mobile device. So you sort of use your mobile device as a token in a way. Have you heard of two-factor authentication?
Absolutely. So accounting systems need it. Banks need it now for credit card payments and internet payments and things like that. Yep.
That's because two-factor is basically saying that you need to verify something in the real world for it to then be verified digitally. So you have to, as an individual, possess the phone of this person to verify that that person is happy to do this transaction online. You do very something very, very similar to this blockchain wallet, is that you would store the wallet on the phone, and then all of the cryptographic proofs would be stored on the phone or in that person's cloud or their Dropbox or something like that. And then it would be their option or their consent to then share the cryptographic proofs through an API, but that gets a little bit more technical.
Yeah, okay. We're just about out of time, so
Cool.
But
sorry, identity.
That's what I wanted to understand a little bit. And for the listener, there, you know, this is a Run Your Business Better podcast. So, sort of for a business owner, mum and dad company, is it any use to them? What about a medium-sized business or a large business? So where do you see it in the next sort of 12 months, 5 years, 10 years going for each of those sort of groups?
Yeah, so I stand by the point I made earlier, is that if blockchain is really to succeed, we shouldn't actually have anyone need to know about it. It should just be in the background. It should be something that blockchain experts need to know about and they need to manage. And then all of these sort of small to medium businesses will just use services on top of which utilize blockchain technology. But it is important to understand blockchain technology. And what I would do as a business owner is I would firstly identify if my business is planning on doing anything with the means of notary, identity, even asset management, namely digital asset management. If you are, then you should maybe check out the various blockchain applications which are within your industry. So search your industry, say power, energy, blockchain, and then you'll come up with things like Power Ledger, which will give you good examples of how your industry is being affected or even disrupted by blockchain.
And what about the, you know, are there some industries at the moment that are quite well advanced in Australia with blockchain?
So Australia is actually really quite excellent in terms of blockchain, both in the regulatory environment, but also in the amount of projects that we're producing. Definitely pulling above our weight. So we've got Power Ledger, and there's Horizon State, which is also a unique blockchain project, which is actually another one of my favorite use cases. What they're doing is putting voting on the blockchain. So basically one of the most fundamental things that we do where trust is involved is to vote. And if you're able to record that vote on the blockchain, you remove all sorts of issues such as corruption, things like that. There's other projects. One, which is emerging recently.
I wouldn't have to turn up to a polling booth and buy a sausage on a Saturday morning in October. I'd be able to do
that. Well, you could still turn up to the polling booth, except they would all have iPads there and you would just plug in. But you could also do it on your phone.
Yeah. At home. I find it quite – I'm a Kiwi by background, and I still vote in New Zealand, And I find it quite interesting that I can sit here at my desk and vote in the New Zealand elections, yet I have to turn up to a polling booth in Australia. So I find it quite weird, really. So I'm looking forward to a blockchain for voting. Save me that
trouble. Yeah, it's a great application for it. Australia is really nuts. I was just going to continue to go on about Australia punching above its weight. There's another few projects out there doing some really excellent work, and there are a few experts coming out of Australia too.
Yeah, and I was also going to mention there's actually an economic summit happening in Sydney at the start of September with federal politicians and academics, people from the business world, and the whole summit's actually around digital trade. So, and I'm sure that blockchain's going to get a fair airing in that. It is something that is quite topical at the moment. And I'm pleased to say that I'm going to be at that summit. So maybe at some stage after it, we can have a discussion about, you know, what the great minds of Australia are thinking about digital trade and how blockchain's going at that stage later in the year.
To influence that. Yeah, that sounds good.
Well, thank you very much, Mitchell. I really appreciate this. And thanks for your time and passing on your knowledge. Well, thank you to my guest, Mitchell Travis, for enlightening us on blockchain. I think the thing for me really is that it's a technology that is going to impact the way we do business going forward. So it's better to start understanding a little bit about it now rather than once it's upon us. And I think people shouldn't be naive to think that it's not going to impact their business. Just like smartphones weren't around 10 years ago, they impact everything that we do with our business, our way we do our payments, apps, how people get information now. I think the same could be said about blockchain in 10 years' time. I think it's just going to become part of the norm about how we do business. So thanks again to Mitchell Travis. If you need to know any more about Mitchell, or you can see his articles on Medium, as he said during the podcast, or you can contact myself, and we're at Byron Vale Advisors, and our website is www.byronvaleadvisors.com. Thanks for listening.